John with Drew and Leslie. Get the shit on. Interracial John. Shut the fuck up and listen. Interracial John. Interracial John. Interracial shit motherfucker. Shut up and listen. Drew and Leslie. Interracial John.
Welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by a very white guy.
Hold on one second, babe. Did I say that you're a very white guy?
I am.
And you're very white indeed?
I am.
Okay, cool. This is your first time joining us. Welcome. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Please subscribe at either of those two places. You can also just go to our website, interracialjohn.com. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Periscope at Interracial John. And we love feedback.
And we really should say, before we even get that, apologies.
Yes.
It's been a while.
Well, it's been a week, 2 weeks.
We usually don't, we don't like to
skip weeks.
Every year it happens.
We didn't have a choice this week.
Yeah. Well, no, but
we tried.
Last year, the same thing. I have an event for my day job.
We tried though. I came home. I thought we were going to be able to get it in, and it just was too much for us.
That's not like a euphemism.
That's what she said.
We were going to get it in.
Yeah. Well,
do we have time?
That's a different.
Are we going to do it in the podcast?
That's a whole different question. Anyways, we do love feedback though, and we're back. And you can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher if it's 5 stars. We'll read it here in the air. You can also email us, interracialjohn, again, JAWN@gmail.com, or you can just pick up your phone, dial 657-JOHN, that's 657-JAWNERS, and leave a message. If it's under 3 minutes and not fuck shit, we'll play it here on the air.
So speaking of,
and shout out to Rod and Karen from the Black Eye Tips.
Yeah, we do have a review.
Oh.
Four ain't got shit. 5 stars.
Hey,
I really gotta appreciate Matt's drunk falsetto.
His drunk falsetto is good.
in tune. Drunk falsetto. All right, so we got a 5-star review, and I gotta zoom it in 1 second. Sorry. Mm-hmm. This is from Levi Winegan.
Hey, Levi.
Levi says, "So dope. Leslie and Drew have been instrumental in my growth as an anti-racist white man while being entertaining as hell.
Ooh.
This podcast is fun, balance the heavy and the light, and brings richness into the world."
Ooh.
Thank you, Levi. Did we read that review last week? I felt like we did, and something about I said
we
like,
weren't on last week, so.
Well, 2 weeks ago, I thought I said like, "Oh, if you're going to quote us as being like instrumental, you can't be out there like
doing
in these streets being bugs."
Maybe. Yeah, well, maybe. If you got it twice, Levi, good for you.
Dang.
We did have also an email this week. Subject is "So much love." Says, "Hey, Leslie and Drew, I'm about to start listening to this week's episode. I need your warmth and humor desperately today. I could spend thousands of words gushing about how much I love your podcast so much, so much. But I'll try not to because I know you're both busy. But the thing is, I really love your show. Yours is the first podcast I've ever left an iTunes review on, which was more complicated than it should be, but whatever. I'm really bummed I didn't get to meet you guys when you were in Philly, but I had food poisoning and ain't nobody got time for that shit. For both of
Literally.
You, thanks so much for providing things to consider, laughs, and joy to everyone who encounters you, and theme songs that are constantly stuck in my head.
That's my job.
And for Leslie in particular, sis, you live in my heart. You inspire and delight me pretty much every day. Some days I hide from social media so I don't get to see your beautiful words. I'm sorry I couldn't donate more for your vacation fund because I feel like you're a big part of why I've made it through most of this year without losing it, and you amaze me. Not because you're superhuman, but because you're not. You're a brilliant, talented, hilarious, kind, and oh so human black woman, like so many I know, fighting for what's right and trying to make a better world for all of us and suffering the pain that comes along with that battle. Anyway, enough gushing, but thanks for the show and being awesome, Jen."
Thanks. Sweet. And I'll speak for both of us. You don't ever have to apologize for not being able to contribute, you know, just listening and engaging with us, and anything you can do to, you know, support Black Led Liberation Organization is enough. You know, we all know that that's not, these are funds that are, you know, usually non-discretionary. They're coming from somewhere else. So, but thank you, Jen. That was really sweet.
Mm-hmm. Very, very, very sweet. So the reason why we weren't able to get a show in, because I've been fucking not home forever and a day and an extra day. Mm-hmm. And that's been pretty crappy. But I was in Charlotte for a few days doing some work down there. Shout out to the Deep Abiding Love crew, Lizzie and Gretchen. That was interesting. The best thing that happened, though, was that I got to have a dinner with Rod and Karen from the Black Guy Who Tips, and it was fucking awesome.
I want to say a special thanks to Rod and Karen for taking care of my girl.
They did. They were so nice. We went to Cowfish, which they talk about on the show all the time. It was really good. And just had a great, you know, they're just like they are on the show, of course. Just gracious, funny, hilarious, wonderful, and fantastic. So shout out to them. And thanks for being so nice and making some time to see me while I was very briefly in town. So that was really cool. I also ran into Clay Aiken while I was there.
That still cracks me up. Isn't he like Senator Aiken? Or
No, he tried to be. He tried to be. I think he ran for Congress in North Carolina. He did not win. But it was funny because we were downtown for this like march they were having, the Charlotte Uprising team. You can go to charlotteuprising.com to get more information about the protests that are going on there, the demands that the young folks have put together, and how you could donate and all sorts of other information. So just know that. Yep. So anyways, they had organized a rally and then a march, and they were doing these really awesome stops at different places downtown and talking a little bit at each stop about why they had stopped there and like what the relevance was to Black liberation and, you know, everything that they've been dealing with as a community. So that was pretty cool. So we went through probably, I was there for a couple of hours and needed to get back because I had an overnight jail support shift and needed to get at least a couple of hours sleep before that. And as we're walking by, I literally, like, out of corner of my eye, I'm like, I swear to God, that's Clay Aiken. And I'm like, oh, that's crazy, you know, whatever. So I said to Gretchen and Lizzie, I'm like, I swear that's Clay Aiken. And Lizzie's like, no way, no way. So she goes back, and I'm like, we should stop. You know, we should get a picture or something. Just, like, funny, like, running into Clay Aiken. But right before we had seen him, we had been discussing how we really would love to get some intel on when the police were going to release the tape. Because they had been talking about maybe they were going to release some of the recordings of Keith Lamont Scott being killed and... So we didn't know, you know, when it was happening. And literally, as we're talking to Clay Aiken, he goes, oh, yeah, I just heard it's going to be released in about an hour. They're doing a press conference. And we were like,
why does Clay have that intel?
Like, well, he was there, funnily enough, doing like commentary shots from people for The View. So we had like a camera crew with him and everything. It was kind of crazy.
The View, the TV show?
Yeah, The View, the TV show.
He's like a correspondent.
I guess.
Because he's from Charlotte?
I guess because he's from North Carolina. I don't know. Anyways. So that was pretty funny. Not only did we see Clay Aiken, but he actually had like actual pertinent fucking information to share.
You're like, God, man, I'm, you know what's really funny is like every time I hear one of these celebrities open their mouths to like say something stupid, it's like, you know what? Nobody was wondering was like, what did Lil Wayne think of this? You're like, we're all sitting around like, man, what's Nelly thinking? What's going on here? Like that's not coming out of the
top. No one's thinking
But here in this moment. Does Clay Aiken have the information? Yes.
He had it.
It's kind of shocking.
Yeah. And he took a great picture with us.
I really wish we could figure out some info on when that video would be out. Maybe somebody should ask Clay Aiken.
Clay Aiken.
Oh, yeah. There
Apparently,
he is.
If you want
He's
the
got
info.
The info.
He had the info right there at fingertips. So that was pretty cool. Of course, I had a run-in with a white UU clergy member.
Honestly, sometimes, like, I don't know what it is about our faith. Like, there's these little data points.
Y'all white?
No, but that's it. But there's you have these data points where it's like, oh, man, you come back from, like, General Assembly, you're like, man, that felt really good. That really looked great. Like, the optics, there's all this stuff about anti-black, all these things that people are talking, this is really great. And then you get the fucking survey, like, a month later about General Assembly from, like, all the people that felt like, oh, I want to talk about my feelings at General Assembly. And I thought it was too black, and I thought it was a surprise. I didn't like being caught off guard with how black it was. Like, just comments like, man, that really took the wind out of your
Comments like, don't forget about the older white women.
Right. So our faith does that shit all the fucking time. And like this story, I'll let you tell it, but it was like the same.
I'm even telling
deal.
The whole story because honestly, the woman's stalking me at this point and it's getting kind of uncomfortable. But
it's that genuine disconnect between our faith's words and the things we say we want to do and believe in and then our actual actions.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's a human thing, but I think in our faith, it's particular with regard to people of color interactions, it's particularly just you know,
we're
just
all about
terrible.
The tokenism and right. the fucking, you know, here, look at us, one of our faith members and ministers is black. But
all
then, like,
that.
When it comes to actually, like, investing in blackness and black faith and all
it's
these
like,
things,
nah. Not so much.
Hey, you know, you guys, that black empowerment struggle, you guys got receipts for all that stuff? No? Oh, okay, we're going to take them.
Okay, we're going to take them away. So, yeah, so anyways, I actually don't even want to talk about that, but I will say, like, just what's been stirring up in me is, like, seeing how white people are showing up and white UUs are showing up in movement spaces and how ugly that is, how damaging it is, how much they try to be gatekeepers to resources, to funding, to access to people that should be connecting directly with black folks. It's really like paternalistic and
so
you know, just ugly. And there's this other thing about them, you know, only wanting to deal with black people that they deem, you know, worthy of their time, right? The average black person is able to be blown off without a thought in the world. But as soon as, which happens to me frequently, people don't know who I am, and then they'll treat me like shit. And then this, which is what happened with this person. And then after the fact, I'm like, oh, you clearly didn't know who the fuck I was, because I'm not saying quite about the way you acted here. It's really disgusting and gross. And you'll be hearing about it from lots of folks, because I'll be telling lots of people. And, you know, as it sinks in further and further, like, oh, this is probably not the person I wanted to piss off. My whole thing is like, I don't want your fucking apology, because your apology should be for the other black people that you did this to that aren't me and didn't have this privilege to flex in this moment, because they don't, you've written them off and you never heard about it. And so you thought you were fucking cool to go on CNN and have some little fucking soliloquy about how you're, you know, standing up for people in Charlotte. Fuck out of here. Anyways.
You know, we did the, like a healing event here in Grand Rapids.
Yes.
And there was it's not a UU church here, but it's like they want to be UU, but they're not. They keep hiring UU ministers, but refuse to join the UUA,
right.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know if that Fountain Street, is that the name of it here?
I think it's called Fountain Street.
And I shouldn't, you know, I don't know the individual, but the there was a minister from that church at this thing that did all the same shit you're talking about.
Oh, it's probably the same one that tried to, like, that was all, like, offended that I didn't give a shit that he wanted to talk to me.
I mean, like, literally, like, leaned back in his chair and crossed his arms, like, let me tell you.
Oh, my God.
So bad.
Just stop. But anyways, I did come across this medium by this person named Rad Flag, if you want to follow them, at Rad Flag, RADFAGG, Rad Flag. And it's an open letter from a black man to his white family in a moment of violence. So I imagine this is really an open letter from black UUs to a mostly white faith in a moment of silence. Okay. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but there are a few things that I thought were really telling, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he says, I'm exhausted from trying to get you on board with a movement, one that mirrors those from previous eras you claim to revere and that has reignited calls for social transformation once heralded by the writers, speakers, musicians, and artists you claim to hold dearest. I wonder if you understand what any of the struggles which have occurred during your lifetime were ever actually about.
That's some truth, yo.
Tell me about it.
This article had, I don't want to say too much tea, but and it's because it's his family.
Yes.
It's very real. And like, it starts with, to the white folks I share the home with. You know what I mean? Like, you can't get any more, you know, direct and serious than that.
Mm-hmm. When we say Black Lives Matter, we mean black people are the experts in our own lives, their own history, their own struggles. We mean your opinions are not necessary and that debating you is a waste of our valuable energy, mental health, and time. We mean you do not get to speak on issues with which you have no experience, which you have not studied nor researched, but on which you feel entitled enough to award yourself authority. We mean you must be quiet and listen to black people. You can no longer hide behind your idealism. The very existence of this movement proves your ideals to be misled and hollow. If legislation alone could save us, the 13th Amendment, Special Field Order Number 15, and Brown versus Board of Education would have saved us. If electoral politics alone could save us, then the innumerable black justices and representatives elected in the last half century would have saved us. If white saviors could have saved us, we would have been saved a million times over. But here we are. And we are dying, and you're watching from the sidelines.
Yeah, I like this paragraph in particular. When I tell you my needs, talk of my pain, my anger, all my stories, it is a privilege and blessing you haven't earned. It's a profound form of vulnerability I engage, not because you deserve it, but because I, as a black person, choose to share it with you. I do so for the sole reason that I do not wish to lose you from my life, do not want the most core parts of my existence to be hidden from you. But when you refuse to look, they remain invisible. When you resist seeing, you deprive yourself of authentic entrance into who I truly am and what I truly need from you. And that, I don't say that sums up a lot for me, but, and I've tried to, like, I don't want to say the individual's name, but there's a person I connect with as an anti-racist white person that has a different sort of, I would say, like, approach to anti-racism, like, I don't know.
Work,
like,
or whatever.
I don't like, I don't call it like methodology, right, but just like what calls you to this. And, right, and this individual is very pious, right? You know, I might even have a theology degree, right? And frequently talks about the cost to white folks in maintaining a system of oppression. And I don't always, I don't like that approach. I think it sometimes comes off like, I don't know, not always, it just seems weird to me, like talking about like the financial issue when it's like people are actually dying. Well, anyway, but the cost he talks about in terms of like to our souls as white people. And I've never really like been able to articulate it, but I feel like what this author has done in this medium is really say it very clearly, that by maintaining levels of oppression and supremacy internally, right? Mm-hmm, just admit that we have this bias and we segregate ourselves online and in real life. We do all these fucking things. Yep. You know, black person walks by, you lock the door. Just, you know, admit that shit. But if you don't, you're cutting yourself off as a white person from an entire breadth of just, you know, humanity and beauty and love and culture and all these things. And on a microcosm, he's saying to his family, you don't know me.
Right.
You don't know me.
You don't know me. And you don't want me. And you don't want to.
Yeah.
And you've proven time and time again that you don't give a shit. He says, and your denial cannot protect you, just as my silence cannot protect me. This movement is happening without you, despite you. But real transformation is not possible unless you listen deeply, sincerely, even when it's painful, and take brave action at your own risk to fight for the things the black community is demanding of you. When black people speak and you do not listen, you are creating the conditions of a riot. And when you tell us we are exaggerating, playing the martyr, making it up, then you cannot be surprised when we elect militancy to make you comprehend what you refused to understand when we were, what you refused to understand when we were peaceful.
Yeah.
You know,
and you and I have talked about that the various like time for white people to like wake up and like get involved and
TikTok,
like
TikTok, TikTok.
Oh, it's gone. It's passed. Like, I think the stages of where white folk could have been involved, it's like, you know, there could have been some involvement at the seat of the table. That's gone, right? So now, like, if white folk get involved, there's no seat of the table. Like, whatever, like, the change looks like, I don't think white people have at this point earned the right to have any decision in that at all, right? Like, that time has passed. Right. Like, if as a group of people, white people are like, oh my God, like, Black Lives Matter, let's really make something and let's really do this, and like, we're all going to get together and like make some laws and changes, like, then it's like, oh, you guys are actually working and doing things as a group of people. You can have a seat at the table, white people. But that's not, like, when you get dragged kicking and screaming, you don't get to be a part of that change.
Hey, you know what I always say? Whenever you make there's it the there, right, you're never too late.
You know, but it's not, there's being too late, and then there's being too late to have an active role in the transformation versus a like, I'm just going to, you know, be here.
I mean, I can't agree with that, because this fight is so long, and it's going to be so long that, like, we are in infancy right now. Not even crawling. So to me, well, it's
maybe,
like,
maybe it's not like a seat at the table, but I feel like, and maybe I'm naive and this is like, I don't know what, but like, I do feel like there should be a time, and I feel like we should be in it, and I don't know when it ends, but we're in the middle of it, where your lack as an individual, as a organization, as a caring group, as a church, all of these things, your entity not being on the right side of this movement is going to, like, you know, it's going to have an impact. Like, there's definitely going to be a time where it's like, okay, you're right. Anytime you come is the right time, but man, you really took a long fucking time getting here.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, Rod was talking about that. I was listening to, I don't know if it was the last night's show or the show but before that, but he was saying that, you know, history is going to look back on people that voted for Trump and really be like, really?
I hope so. I hope the politicians that fucking stumped for his fucking ass, I hope their feet are held to the proverbial fire forever. ever.
I just feel like they're just doing irreparable harm to their actual brand, such that it was. I mean, it wasn't great, but I feel like at least they had one.
Yeah.
And like, I used to always say, like, man, that maybe there could be a Republican that I would vote for. And now it's like, nope, yeah, it's impossible.
But my argument was,
I don't even know how they come back
I said,
from this.
Give me a Republican that reverses the script on like one or two, you know, like key issues, like pro-legalization of marijuana. Like literally make it an actual, like, God damn, this guy's like really hard on the legalization of marijuana, but he's also like really like anti-abortion, all this other shit. Like that would be like, you know, like give somebody a conscience, like a conflict. Like, oh, I've got to actually think about this Republican. They never, at least for me, there's never anything to think about. And they're making it even worse. Like it's more of a no-brainer. Like, I never had to consider a Republican candidate. Now that this is your fucking, your chess piece, this is the bastion of your party. No thanks.
No thank you.
And look what they did to that. I can't remember her name. I don't really care. But down ballot Republicans are doing this like fucking twisting in the wind weird. Like there was a debate where they're like, do you think, you know, Donald Trump is a good role model? And the person is like a elected Republican wanting to win their seats, like, yeah, I mean, he's any president's a, you know, a good role model, and he's good for president. So yeah, I guess, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was just like painful to see this person. Like, who was it? Cruz did the same thing. Like, you know, I'm going to vote for him, but he's making it harder and harder to support him. Like, how is that? Like, I just can't understand how that is. I don't know what the justification is. I guess like towing the party line, but that's worth it to you? Towing the party line? Having to fucking look him in the eye and have him go tell you to get back on your little plane, Chris Christie? That's worth it?
Yeah.
I mean, he's done. His career is submarined.
Oh, yeah, it's over.
And, like, the lasting image is you fucking kissing his ring and getting told to get on your little plane? Gravy.
Well, what are you going to do?
Hopefully not vote him into office.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how that works exactly. But I also got to go to Atlanta after I got back from Charlotte, which was part of the Revive Love tour, which was fun and exhausting but great. Those who don't know, I'm on tour with Rev Sekou and the Holy Ghost and Black Lives of UU and Standing on the Side of Love. So it's been a little bit of, you know, UU stuff, a little bit of movement space stuff. It's been an interesting, you know, thing melding both of those in somewhat you know, seamless ways, and some now we'll see. The next two tour stops will be a little more integrated, so it'll be interesting to see how those play out. But Thursday, Lena and Carlton and myself got to have a little meet and greet with the, and I'm going to quote this so you get this, the Racial and Ethnic Concerns Committee from UUCA in Atlanta.
Sorry. That's just like, I don't know if I was talking to you about it, maybe it was with Dr. M. Stash, but there was this report about, you know, companies and they're making people stupid and shit. And it was like they had a 25-page report with all these policies and procedures that they were going to do, but nothing actually changed. And that's what that racial concern sounds like. Sounds like another committee, but nothing in practice is ever going to really change. And we want to be more concerned. Oh, okay. Let's make a committee to be concerned. Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, I mean, it's been around for like 30 years, this committee at this church. I just think the name of it is Racial and Ethnic Concerns is really just a lot. And honestly, it would have been a lot 30 years ago. So it's like interesting to me.
What was the pastor that called you? He was like, we want you to come and talk about Black Lives Matter.
Oh, that was the fucking Fountain Church, yeah, dude.
For what end? Well, you know, to hear more Black Lives Matter
stories.
Stuff. Stories.
Stories, they said. Yeah, no thanks. I'll pass on that offer. Yeah. So, anyway, so the Atlanta stop was pretty cool. We had this meet and greet thing, which was infuriating and, you know, all of the things that you normally expect, you know, just the questions like why, like one of the large topics is why it's offensive that white UU churches sing African-American spirituals. And like that we had to like have a conversation about it was ridiculous. But what was interesting was that it was the first time any of the three of us had done something like that with more than one Black person. And it was really great to see how much easier it was, even though it was still infuriating, like just seeing that we had backup in the room. And then also we would each talk about a topic and you could see some people would connect to it the way Carlton would articulate it. And some people would connect to it the way Lena would talk about it. And some people would connect with whatever I was saying. So it was good to have, you know, different articulation and different ways of talking about the same topic from three very different black people in one room. And we're all UUs. So I feel like it was one of those like, yeah, we're not a monolith, so we're not going to say the same thing. There isn't a fucking meeting and party line. This is just how we feel. And so that was really nice. But Friday night was the actual show in Atlanta, which was at the Southerners on New Ground House in Atlanta. And I don't even know what to say. Southern, if you don't know, SONG is a regional queer liberation organization made up of people of color, immigrants, undocumented people, people with disabilities, working class and rural and small town LGBTQ people in the South. It's co-directed by Mary Hooks. I think you know Mary, don't you? I think you met Mary.
I think I do.
Yeah. And Paulina Helm Hernandez. And so they have this huge house that serves as their office, and it has like a backyard, and they have like a little garden in front and everything. So the show was in the backyard. It was amazing. Like, the weather was perfect. The trees were swaying. They had like put twinkle lights up, and it was just really magical and wonderful. And my nephew got to come, and my niece got to come, and I had a great time there, which was really nice. And then Saturday and Sunday was the Many Rivers to Cross Festival outside of Atlanta, and this like farm in the middle of nowhere, which was interesting. It was interesting. It was a lot of famous people.
Elaborate, please.
Well, it just was very like cishet, you know, black male focused, being, you know, Harry Belafonte was the, you know, person that called it to order and brought the whole thing together. He's hosting it. And so that was one thing about it. And then it just was very like, you know, I feel like before it, there was a lot of like making it seem like it was going to be grounded in the movement. And I wouldn't necessarily say that that was the case. I think it was really a good entry point for people, both artists, famous people, and regular folks that were coming to hear the music to connect to some of these ideas and things. But I don't think it was about movement per se, if that makes
sense.
And
that was your impression? That was what you were told initially?
I feel like that was the impression I had. I can't speak for anybody else. That's just how I felt when it was first, like, you know, it was like, you know, festival, social justice music festival. Like, that's not just music and you're going to get a message with the music. Do you know what I mean?
Well, and I'm not making excuses or equivocating for them, but I know organizing shit like this, a lot of times you're kind of like selling air. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know exactly what you've got, and it changes and moves. And
oh, no. I mean, look, it was what it was. A few things that also were just was very, it was a little elitist. You know, it had these like wristbands, and the wristbands were how you paid for anything. No cash was accepted from any vendor, any food vendor, any beverage vendor, any vendor at all. And you had to either have a credit card that you could use like your smartphone to charge up your wristband, or they had these stations you could do it with, and a few of them that you could put cash at too. So that was a little elitist as well. And
I wonder what the purpose in that is, just so that there's no cash.
Yeah, they don't want cash. Yeah, they don't want cash there. It's so much safer for everybody.
You don't,
and
have
I'll say
security.
Like, I have a bank account, obviously, and it was nice to just walk up like boop boop. Yeah. Bloop, bloop. It was nice.
But like you said, you have to have a phone, a credit card.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot you have to have. And it was kind of like, and it was expensive too. So it was kind of like extra, extra.
And you said it was in a farm? Like,
yeah, it was like in a huge farm.
Like, buses don't go there though, yeah?
No, no, no. You had to have a vehicle to get there as well. They didn't have any like transportation coming from the city out there. Yeah. So it was, that's what I mean. But it was a lot of that kind of stuff that just didn't necessarily, like, there wasn't special like holding space and for families that have lost folks. Like, it was just a lot, like little things like that. There's just like, oh, okay, so this isn't that thing. This is something else.
I gotcha.
And something else is fine. It's just a matter of like, you know, making sure people are aware when they commit to things, you know? But I got to see a lot and meet lots of, you know, cool, famous people. I don't know who.
You looked amazing. I don't know if the sun, the your hair, the glasses. I even said, you FaceTime with me and I'm instant. I'm like, whoa, girl. Jesus, man. Like, holy shit. And you're like, what are you talking about? You look fucking hot. I even said, I go, you are going to get, people are going to compliment your hair all day, and it's going to be more than just the hair. And you, like, not even like an hour later, like, oh, T.I. said something about my hair.
Everybody says something about my hair. I don't know. Maybe it was the light. The lighting there was amazing, I'll have to say, like, independent. So perhaps that was it. But yeah.
I mean, I'm biased. I really, I know I'm biased. Yeah. And I say, like, like that day in Atlanta at the Many Rivers Fest was like a gold star a Leslie gold day. Star Leslie like 10 day. Out of 10. That's you were funny. Popping.
Yeah. Really you know, a few folks hollered. I'll
some,
say that.
Some days we put it all together really
some
good.
Days it comes all together and it works.
Yeah, so you said it was very cishet focused. Mm-hmm. And maybe transition, we have a couple pieces talking about Twitter. But I don't even want to like say his at, but it's like one of these like revolutionary communist like you know
whatever Poteps.
We are the movement. We're the movement. Not you. We're the movement. Mm. And the person I shouldn't say I should say this account has something like you know like 50,000 followers. But if you do one of those like Twitter audits, it's like a bunch of them are fake, right? And like every time they tweet anything, it's like a weird like stream of consciousness of like. Instead of using all 140 characters, you'd be like, I'm going to say something. Next tweet. This is real. Next tweet. I'm for real. It's like okay, I get it. You know, this account. Mm. But the thing that's weird is that they're railing against, I guess, like what this account feels is a co-opting of the like the real, I'm putting air quotes around,
yeah,
movement. Mm-hmm. By I guess like a black gay agenda is their opinion, like mm. like the non-cis het portion of the Black Lives Matter movement. And like literally it's like they, you know, they in this account is like atting various people, you know, these people are the worst and they're, you know, stealing your energy and they're lying to you and they're charlatans and they're taking your time and effort and energy and they're moving it to this, you know, crazy Black Lives Matter movement. The real movement is this. But so anyway, this person like once a month goes on like a tweet storm and like, you know, gets all like mad and like ats a bunch of people.
Right.
But here's the fucking crazy thing. Me. Like ats me in like a string of like, I'm not even kidding, like DeRay, Netta,
but
Sean
so weird
because
like you're not even
it's crazy.
Don't make no sense
on the one tweet he added Charles Wade, which isn't even the right account because it was aka Charles Wade and he's off Twitter, and DeRay, Netta, and Sean King and me. And I'm like, bro, you got like the wrong person on one. Like Sean King blocked me. Like I don't know what you think. I'm like
seriously,
one of the other people like unfollowed me like kind of like angrily, like I don't know what you're kind of like, I don't know why you're lumping me in. Like it's just strange. And it's every month, once a month, there's like, you know, blah blah blah, and very white guy. I'm like, dude, you really got the wrong idea. I don't know what you think, but okay.
Mm-hmm.
It just cracks me up.
It is kind of crazy.
And speaking of Sean King,
fucking Sean King, this boycott bullshit.
Honestly, babe,
if more people doesn't come up and ask me some bullshit about it, listen, like ridiculous. It's fucking disgusting.
I think it's up to 100,000 people.
It's over 100,000 people. It's over 100,000 people. What? Click here for our plan. It goes to a fucking article of his in the Daily News. There's no fucking plan. I'm telling you right now, like literally anybody who's hearing my voice right now, if you were considering joining this thing, please don't do it. It's going to fail. This man is a charlatan. He lies, he steals people's work, and he lets people down.
You know, I'm going to just speak from my own and our personal perspective. Two different groups, Justice Together and Justice That's All, both imploded in really, like, wild with, like, accusations of interlopers and people were, you know, there's this pattern of anyone that disagrees with him is lumped into the same as a racist troll, right? Like, so you have a legitimate complaint, you're just like these racist trolls. That's kind of like the pattern. But they both imploded in just this like really like horrible, like accusatory and ugly fashion. And the pattern was exactly the same. Hurry up, sign up, radio silence. Individuals start moving without him. And, oh, wait a minute, you're trying to take control of this thing that I'm creating, and I'm going to take this away. So admin, you know, all these kind of things. And it was both same. And the second group, I didn't even join. I joined the first group. I miraculously appeared in the second group, meaning my data was transferred, you know.
Illegally. You did not request to be added into this new entity. He never even changed the name of the actual business name. He started collecting money again. Like, literally, it was really, really bad. And then what was worse was his complete erasure, particularly of black women. I can't tell you how many black womanists that he has unfollowed and blocked on social media because we are just like, you're talking shit. And I'm just saying, you can go to his little fucking website, click on his quote unquote plan that takes you to an article that conveniently enough he's now going to get clicks to on his employer, the Daily News. And this is the other thing he does. He bumps up his profile every time he starts one of these bullshit things. The first one, he got the job at Daily Kos. The second one, he got the job at the Daily News. I can only imagine where his plan is to go from now. But I'm telling you, this fucking plan includes include something that says, we will not be releasing the names of the cities, states, businesses, and institutions that we will be boycotting until December 5th, 2016. Mind you, that's the day the boycott begins. Between now and then, we hope the cities and states around the country will begin to enact emergency legislation and policies to prevent police brutality and racial violence. Furthermore, we do not want any potential institutions to somehow undermine our efforts.
You know, and again, just I'll be real polite and honorific. He's a good writer. He can convey in tone and emotion effectively, in particular for white people, you know, a lot of what's going on. And I wish to hell he would just maintain that lane a little bit more. This is like, honestly, the third or fourth grassroots attempt at a coalition. And at some point, we just have to be like, you're not good at that.
Look, I'm not good at it either. The last phone conversation I had with this dude, I took the time to actually speak with him after being, I'm not kidding, like, incensed, my work stolen, my time wasted, really, really horrible. And I took the time to speak with him still.
An hour.
For a long time. And before we got off the phone, he said to me, he promised me, he's like, I'm done in this area. I'm not going to be doing any large scale organizing anymore. And I said to him, I said, okay, I will stop. I will just disengage with you, and that'll be the end of any problem that I have with you. But if you start fucking organizing again, I'm not staying quiet, because you can't do it anymore. You cannot do it anymore. And here we are again. And that's all I want to say about it. That's all I have to say about it. That's it.
So there was a couple other fun little things on Twitter. Can I make sure I get this person's name right? What is it here? Inija Khadija. So Slim Daroni, the Abby, but Inija Khadija says, someone please come get my mama. And her mom took a picture of her Facebook like profile page and blew it up and framed it.
No, it's Instagram.
Oh, that's Instagram?
Oh, yeah, that's Instagram.
Love it. But like literally took the Instagram, blew it up, put it in a frame and put it on the wall. Like,
I mean, in her defense, it's a good picture.
It's a hella good picture.
She looks great in the picture. But it's pretty funny.
It totally reminded me of my mother-in-law, your mom. And she's gotten better. She can actually do some things with Facebook. But in the beginning, she'd literally mail you pictures. like mail shit to your email. Like, can you put this on my face?
Yeah, she would. She'd email me and she'd be like, can you put this on my face? On my whatever. Face. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she still does that every once in a while. Like,
occasionally.
I can't delete this. It's private. I don't know what's going on.
All right. Well, 40 minutes in. Let's get to the show.
Well, there's one other one that was even funnier. So my mom has been...
The same links. That's why
I don't think she listens to the show. I mean, I hope not. I love her. But she's been having some issues with her computer, trying to get like different things to work with her phone and this and that. And it was a long hour. I love her. But so I tweeted. I said... And the tweet was very simple. I said, Mom, I love you, but if I'm going to continue providing remote telephonic tech support, I'm going to have to start invoicing you. And then I ended it, I weep for your local Verizon guy, right? And I didn't at Verizon. I didn't hashtag Verizon, but I did use capital V Verizon. It wasn't even like 2 minutes later. Not even 2 minutes later. Verizon support. It's okay. We love your mom too. I was dying, dude.
So funny.
I was like, well, and to Verizon's credit, BCW, because they always do that now with social media. They do that carrot, and then they put their initials, so you know.
Right, it was like a specific person.
Yeah, when it's
right.
A shared account. So Verizon support, BCW, give that individual more responsibility to raise. They get it. They understand Twitter. Mm-hmm. And they said, we love your mom, too. I literally, at the end of the hour, it was like, it's okay. I'll just go to the Verizon store. I'm like, oh, my God, that poor guy. Oh, Jesus. Like, we can do it. Come on. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Yeah.
We can do it. We can do it. All right. You ready?
Yeah, let's go.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
So, I guess today is the
yesterday.
Prison? Yesterday. Mm-hmm. Ramsey Orta is going to be serving a 4-year prison sentence. And if you don't know, Ramsey filmed the officers who choked and killed Eric Garner. And for those paying attention, the only individual who's going to be serving any jail time is Ramsey Orta, who filmed the officers that killed Eric Garner, which is just so fucked up.
Yeah, it is. So and they started targeting him immediately. It's something specific to him, but it's also a message, right?
Oh, it totally is.
You know, it sends a message of, you know, what it looks like when you stand up for black people.
Yeah, so, but you're right. He he filmed the incident or the death, execution, I should say, mm-hmm. and they right away, you know, tried to get the camera from him. Who is he? And then he had a, you know, I guess it was drugs and weapon charges, and it gets trumped up. And most people don't get 4 years.
No, they
don't.
You
know, most people do not get 4 years. I've heard murders get less than that.
Literally. You know?
So like a weapon and drug charges to get 4 years is just absurd. But when they sentenced and put the cuffs on folks in the court, chanted, you know, industrial police, fuck these racist police, hands up. It's just, the whole thing makes you kind of sick.
It is. It's really gross.
And you're right about it being a message. Mm. And there's been, you know, again, a lot of these messages from these blue lives laws to, you know, protest is now a felony on certain places and grounds. As soon as the, was it Missouri? What football program sat out a game to get change at the presidential level, and then they didn't pass it, but within a week the state of Louisiana is like, no, if you've got a scholarship and you do this protest thing, you're gonna lose your scholarship. So it's, you know, it's not subtle at all, but it's very clearly designed to make protest more difficult. People, you know, who's serving fucking 20 years for like a marijuana charge in California? I can't remember who it was.
Oh, I don't know that one. I know Josh is in jail.
Oh, the whole, everything's just absurd with it, but
yeah.
Pray for Ramsey and hope his time in goes quickly and he comes out and is able to rebuild and get back with his family and stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Brazil also crowned its first black Miss Brazil in 30 years, only a second time in its entire history.
And, you know, there's always like, we were watching the Olympics and there's Brazil and it was like, almost like, you're like, oh my God, an Afro-Brazilian. And I forget the statistics, but aren't like 40 or 50% of Brazilians?
Yeah, 50% of its 200 million residents identify as black or mixed race, and it has a really vibrant culture. In fact, it has the largest concentration of African descendants outside of Africa, period.
Imagine our country, half of our country was black, and not having a black Miss America for 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's supremacy.
Yeah.
That is supremacy in a nutshell.
Well, and they do it rough in Brazil. I feel like the, you know, the favelas, and they have obviously the race like we do, but I think they've got a more significant class issue, I think. Mm. I think the lower end of the spectrum in Brazil is probably significantly worse off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's obviously overrepresented with their black and brown population.
Yeah, for sure. The other thing I saw, which is really funny, is I saw the headline. It says, iconic laid-back cat immortalized with his own statue in his favor.
So, who are we talking about?
No, it's this like fucking cat. His name is Tom Billy, the cat. And he was a neighborhood cat, calm, serene personality, captured many people's hearts. He used to just lounge about. He's kind of tubby, and he would like lean back, and he had this one spot on these steps that he loved to just like chill and sit on. He came from Istanbul, and he's well known by the locals, and he became an internet sensation because, you know, somebody snapped a shot of him like lounging in his spot. But he'd be lounging all over the place. People always were trying to take pictures with him and shit. And now they put a statue that looks just like him, right where he used to sit. So I think that's pretty
cool. That's awesome. That's awesome. There was when we lived in Argentina, there was a dog at the corner that was sort of like the neighborhood dog, what do you call it, like a little corner store. But remember that big, was it a German Shepherd? And he was always out there every day and just kind of like walking up and down. So we're at our, I think the vet, which is up the block, a block away.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got the door closed. And the dog comes up to the door and bumps the door and like scratches at the door. And she goes, oh, my fiesta. Like she's like making like a shakedown, takes a treat, throws it on the floor. Mm-hmm. It skids across the floor, goes under the door, like the little like quarter inch brim under the door. The dog snaps it with his paw, picks it up and walks away. I was like, that is the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen.
It was so cool. He was like, yep. She's like, he's like, yep, that's the tax. He takes care of shit around here.
Came up and got his fucking treats, man. I was like, damn, that dog's got the life, man.
Yeah. And then we had some updates. One was, you know, I was doing the whole
Step Up Scholastic.
Step Up Scholastic and all of that.
So, with a smile.
Yeah, all that stuff I've been doing with a bunch of other wonderful folks from Teaching Tolerance and some other places. Penn put out a little, I guess it was a report officially, kind of like, I guess.
It's like 60-page PDF.
Yeah, it's a whole like analysis, basically.
Somebody put a lot of money and time into like making this thing.
Yeah.
Like for dissemination to like within, I think, educational, like, you know, right? Like the teaching of education, pedagogy, or whatever. Like, it's, mm-hmm. it's like an important document.
Yeah. So it's from Pen America, and so it's called Missing from the Shelf, book challenges and lack of diversity in children's literature. And I am quoted in it a couple of times, actually, just talking about what happened with the Step Up Scholastic campaign, and then also with the birthday cake for George Washington book, Slavery with a Smile.
Read just one of the quotes.
Also, one says, Leslie Mack, a Black Lives Matter organizer, led a chorus of voices against the book. She talked about it on her podcast and began the hashtag campaign, Slavery with a Smile. She wrote on Twitter, quote, our goal is simply to provide a mechanism and platform to ensure that at Scholastic hears from those most affected by the decisions they make, end quote. They talk a little bit more about how that book got pulled, and says, meanwhile, Leslie Mack's campaign evolved into a broader call for more and better representation of children of color, and using the hashtag Step Up Scholastic, Mac has collected comments from school children on an associated Tumblr blog. Why are all the kids who look like me enslaved? Asked a fifth grader. One first grader told Scholastic, we looked at your magazines and we saw mostly white people and animals. And then just talks about Ellen O. Says Scholastic defends its position to pull the book. The company says it has been listening to the feedback of Step Up Scholastic. It has sought to reflect the objective of more diverse books as part of its business strategy. I think now the balance may have shifted. So in some of these communities, the parents are extremely demanding of improved schools, more resources for children in the schools, more books, and more books about people of color, says Dick Robinson. He said that this creates a positive momentum for matching our children's needs with a better flow of diverse books.
So. Yeah, it occurs to me. It's interesting. They didn't reach out to you at all, huh?
No.
Like, they say in the report, Scholastic says they're listening to the concerns of Step Up Scholastic. But you have Leslie Mack. You could ask her. Has Scholastic contacted you?
They haven't contacted any of us.
I didn't think so.
Purposefully.
I didn't think so.
Very deliberate in their bullshit. The last update is a bad one, which is about the, I don't know if you remember that Virginia teen that was charged with stealing a 65-cent carton of milk. So he's going to trial to prove his innocence. Trial has been set. He's 14 years old, and he's charged with stealing a 65-cent carton of milk. Ryan Turk was slapped with petty larceny for swiping the drink from the Graham Park Middle School cafeteria, even though he was enrolled in his former school's free lunch program. Ryan, who's now a high school freshman, was also charged with disorderly conduct when he refused to go to the principal's office after the incident. The teen turned down an offer of non-judicial punishment through a diversion program, opting to go through a criminal trial instead in November. Quote, his mother says, my son is not going to admit to something he did not do. And the charges stem from an incident on May 10th that we covered here on the show. And the teen reacted in frustration after the officer handled him roughly, according to local reports. And police say Ryan was charged with larceny for attempting to, quote, conceal the milk, and then was suspended from school for being uncooperative with school officials and for using his cell phone on campus. Ryan's mother, who works for the school district, reviewed surveillance footage of the incident and said the video shows that her son did not conceal the milk, according to the Post. Ryan had a preliminary hearing set for Tuesday and is set to go on trial next month, just before his 15th birthday.
Man, that's fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be costs and all the fucking, you know.
It's crazy.
And just to 14, like, just for a second, right? Most of us I'm 40, but like, man, when I was 14, like, world was just kind of like, I don't want to say like scary. You're a teenager. Like, shit's just not comfortable. And now this fucking system, the state, is coming down on you over a fucking 65-cent fucking carton of milk? Like, that's just got to be traumatizing, period, right? Mm. Just the notion that this billion-trillion-dollar fucking entity is coming after you over 65 cents of milk because your skin is black, you know? Like, that's not escaping him. Like, this never would happen to a white person.
No way.
Never fucking would happen to a white person.
Anyways.
The other thing I might say about that Penn article is that they called you a Black Lives Matter activist, which I don't know. I feel like the Chicago AP manual style or some other folks need to maybe get on with that. There's a difference between
like
working,
just being a black person.
Yeah, like black liberation work doesn't mean you're a Black Lives Matter activist, right? And that's increasingly on the journalistic side. That's causing problems. Like, you know, incorrectly referencing people's connection in politic, and then that not being addressed.
Well, that's deliberate. It just reinforces the monolithic idea of blackness. So they don't want to actually like contemplate that just because I'm a black woman, I may not be associated with this thing that they know about black people. So
yeah,
I mean, and I'm not even saying I'm not associated with them. I'm just saying it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, so we have this thing from Jerry Rice, but it's an apology.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I didn't even think of that because it was an update, too.
So, 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 so.
Uh-oh. That thing hates that song. I don't know what it is about it.
It does, man. It's not happy. It's going
to
crash.
Yeah, Jerry Rice had to apologize.
So Jerry Rice got, admittedly, lots of appropriate backlash after tweeting "All Lives Matter" in response to Colin Kaepernick's protest of the national anthem. Many accused the legendary wide receiver of being out of touch. He stood by his tweet. However, Thursday, the 50-year-old former 49er issued an apology, stating he was misinformed about the Black Lives Matter movement. "When I said all lives matter, I didn't know about the movement going on between Black Lives Matter. I want to apologize for my mistake." That's it, huh? Whew. That's a zero, buddy.
Yep.
"I didn't know about the movement going on between Black Lives Matter." What does that even mean?
I think because he didn't understand that people that say all lives matter are saying it in opposition to Black Lives Matter. Like, he is an idiot. That's the first thing. And secondly, he has no clue about anything. Like, that's a bubble you can live in when you're rich and you have that much distance from reality. Like, you really could just be like, "Oh, I just heard about this thing, you know, because it doesn't affect me at all."
And I have to say, sometimes I do.
But I do think that the reason why this happened, because somebody asked him about Colin Kaepernick, and his response was, "All lives matter. So much going on in the world. Can we all just get along? Colin, I respect your stance, but don't disrespect the flag." That's what he tweeted.
Yeah, no, that's
crazy. He had an opinion he espoused without any fucking research, just a fucking Google, like nothing.
Well, and let me ask you this. So I said the other day, I said, I don't know if like things are changing or if my circle is just changing. Like I'm hanging out with more like dope ass people, so like things feel different, right? Like I'm just, not that the world is better, but like
my circle
is better.
Okay.
So I sometimes wonder if like, am I in an inadvertent, like, not quite echo chamber, but like you can make some assumptions about the rest of the world and forget that like there are people that can really, really be like Jerry, like completely out of touch. And so I guess my question is, how many people now, if you were to query like, you know, adults over the age of 18, right? 200 and something million adults over the age of 18, what percentage don't know that All Lives Matter is a racist retort to Black Lives Matter?
Over all of them?
Yeah.
More than half.
Really?
Yes. If I was going to guess.
Yeah, that's why, because I feel like,
definitely more than half.
On the one hand, I'm like, but how the fuck did Jerry Rice not know that? Holy cow, like a cursory fucking anything will tell you that All Lives Matter is not the thing to say, right? Like the DCC had their memo, like, "Don't say All Lives Matter." Like, right. It was like a bullet point.
It's
like,
racist.
Yeah, like, really. Like they were wise enough to be like, holy shit, don't fucking say that.
Above all, whatever you do, just don't do that.
That's a lightning rod. Don't fucking touch it.
Right.
But like, 50% of people like Jerry Rice still don't kind of know or get that.
It's true.
So sometimes, like, on the one hand, I'm like, God, I can't believe you don't get that. And I was like, oh, I guess half the people still don't fucking
get
that.
No, they really don't. And, you know, for me, I travel a lot, so I get to be in a lot of different communities. And it is something that's like, you see, you know, these patterns, even though they're very different in terms of the, like, situation and solution and all of that for each community, the general pattern is very consistent in terms of how, you know, uprising begins and what transpires subsequent to that. And part of that is this counter kind of narrative that gets pushed out, you know, that it's racist or it's trying to do something or it's, you know, whatever they try and say, get a job, all that bullshit. So it's interesting. Anyways,
I don't got a segue, but I'll just
put the game clock at 4:20.
Smoke weed every day.
Bam. Bam. Yeah. So Damian Marley is converting a California prison into a pot farm.
That's the coolest thing I've ever fucking heard, dude.
He announced that he, in partnership with Ocean Grow Extracts, is converting a former 77,000 square foot California state prison into a cannabis grow space that will cultivate medical marijuana for state dispensaries. Quote, "Many people sacrificed so much for the herb over the years who got locked up," says Marley, noting the poetic justice of turning a prison that once housed nonviolent drug offenders into a cannabis cultivation facility. Quote, "If this venture helps people and is used for medicinal purposes and inspires people, it's a success. By that measure, the prison to pot farm initiative is already a triumph with their purchase of the Claremont Custody Center in Calinga, California for $4.1 million. Marley and his partners instantly relieved the economically challenged Central Valley town of its roughly $3.3 million debt. Wow. Wow.
How much debt?
$3.3 million. They paid $4.1 for it. The venture will also generate 100 jobs in an economically stagnant region plagued by ongoing historic drought and descending oil prices, both of which have damaged the region's traditional farming and oil industries.
What a fucking brilliant repurposing of a prison, because, like, you know, you don't want people coming into your pot farm and stealing your weed, right?
It's got a fortification. It's
fucking brilliant.
And
dude,
it will generate an estimated $1 million in annual tax revenues for Kalinga.
And it was probably a fucking white elephant, right? It was costing them money.
Just sitting there.
You can't fucking have it, like, empty. Like, kids will be fucking in there dying and shit. Like, you gotta actually, like, spend money on this fucking thing every year. Yeah. Or sell it to one of the Marley kids and make it a pot farm.
Yep. There's more, a little bit more that I found interesting anyways. Just his manager said it happened in an organic way. It's something Damien's been, you know, cannabis is something he's been around with his friends and his faith. And they've watched people who've sacrificed their lives for it. The industry that motivates us to be advocates, as well as knowing that there are healing properties in cannabis. And he also introduced the Speak Life, a proprietary strain of cannabis he created with Ocean Grow. The strain is based on the company's lauded OG Kush, but altered genetically with the help of a PhD-trained chemist who helped cultivate the unique breed. The OG's always been my favorite. When they introduced this strain of OG, I really loved it and loved its consistency. The bud is made of 70% indica and 30% sativa, and is hand-watered and trimmed. So
hand-watered and trimmed. Mm-hmm. That's got to be nice.
So anyways, that's pretty cool. He's promoting his cannabis venture with his music. Stony Hill, the name of the new Denver dispensary, is also the title of his fourth full-length album, set to be released in January, just in time for the first crop from Coalinga on Republic Records. Speak Life, the name Marley's new strain, also happens to be the name of a track from Stony Hill. So he's got all this, like, synergy going on. I think it's pretty fucking dope.
Yeah, if you're going to partner with somebody, Marley's a
good name.
Good name, yeah. So Loretta Lynch, God bless her, finally admitted that cannabis is not the gateway drug we've all been taught to believe.
Surprise!
Tuesday, Lynch talked to a group of Kentucky high school students at a town hall meeting. She firmly expressed her opinion that prescription drugs are a gateway drug, not cannabis.
Blam, blam.
The gateway theory surrounding cannabis has been repeatedly dismissed by a number of research teams. And I'd like to point out the legalization of weed in Colorado.
Yep.
Like the opiate and heroin overdoses, like, plummeted
25% in 1 year.
Yeah,
in,
like, overnight. Yeah, what's that tell you? Gateway theory has been reviewed, dismissed. Number of research teams, the evidence simply does not support the gateway theory. Current U.S. Attorney General agrees. Students gathered to listen to Lynch talk about opiate abuse in observation of, I'm going to say this, prescription opiate heroin epidemic awareness week. So you think weed's the gateway drug, but you've got prescription opiate heroin epidemic awareness week?
Week.
Epidemic awareness week. Tyler Kraft in a high school student meeting asked Lynch if recreational cannabis leads to opiate abuse. There's a lot of discussion about marijuana these days. Some states are making it legal. People are looking into medical uses for it. And I understand that it is still as common as almost anything. When we talk about heroin addiction, we usually, as we have mentioned, are talking about individuals that started out with a prescription drug problem. And then, because they need more and more, they turn to heroin. It isn't so much that marijuana is a step right before using prescription drugs or opiates.
Boom.
And, like, you know, who's been pushing all these fucking prescriptions and these pills? Oh, Big Pharma. Oh, yeah, got it.
Mm-hmm. Surprise.
And geez, I wonder why they wouldn't want something like weed that is easy to cultivate and grow and
you on can your do own
and have it on your own property. Yep. And there's a vibrant, you know, I wouldn't even say nascent, like, billion-dollar market outside of traditional pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so interesting. Anyways.
Very interesting.
Up next.
Where's my thing?
Ooh.
I got a...
Notice me, senpai. Notice me.
I know. I'm trying to find it.
We got receipts. We got receipts. Yeah. We got receipts.
We do have receipts. This one came today. I'm going to tell you. I'm going to read the whole fucking thing because this is beautiful receipts. It's a memo. Reads, to the passive-aggressive neighbor and his wife, apartment 5J. From Richard, apartment 6J. I'm finna tell you what you not gonna do. October 6, 2016. This letter serves a formal response to the note left by you expressing in no uncertain terms your intent to notify building management and the authorities of which you perceive to be the inconsiderate volume of my speaking voice in the evening hours of October 5th, 2016. First, let me be clear in addressing my lack of bother for your grievance and resolve to not be coerced to remedial action by your idle threats or seemingly pervasive white tears. I, the tenant of apartment 6J, have secured this rental property through earnings I made and credit earned, have no inherent or expressly stated obligation to accommodate your hypersensitivities or those of your spouse when occupying my home. Though I empathize with the emotional distress brought on by sleep deprivation, citing my voice as the root cause of your incapacity to attain restful slumber is both improbable and juvenile. Even in the off chance that my voice had been above what you consider to be considerate, the aggressive posturing of your note to address the matter was wholly unnecessary and, quite frankly, unproductive. Second, your lack of both interpersonal and intrapersonal intelligence reflects poorly on you as a neighbor and, frankly, an American. And as one of the only tenants of color occupying this building at full market rate, I find it personally abhorrent that you'd levy the threat of involving the authorities for an insignificant infraction such as the one you noted in your poorly written and ill-thought-out correspondence. As a black man, I take these overt actions as a direct threat to my physical and psychological well-being and as an act of violence upon me. See attached list of the 821 men, women, and children killed by police or in police custody to date in 2016. This threat cannot be taken lightly. To that end, I'm submitting a formal complaint to both the New York City Police Department, the American Civil Liberties Union, and the District Community Board so they are made aware of your callous and irrational threats upon my person. Lastly, I think it's worth reminding you that you currently reside in Northern Manhattan, an enclave of ethnic and racial diversity that existed in community well before your gentrifying arrival. In the words of Robert Jones Jr., quote, one of the greatest divides between white people and black people, or the wealthy and the not wealthy, is noise. Look forward to me continuing to make it at the volume in which I determine is acceptable. Should you feel the need to threaten me again, please do so in person so that an amenial solution can be reached. Kind regards, Richard Scott Brookshire III, MPA, your hashtag very black neighbor, hashtag Black Lives Matter.
Please clap.
I got to give that all the goddamn... He started it with what you fit not to do, right? He opened it with what you fit not to do and then went on the most like just tongue-lashing, eviscerating, like, good God, that was just pure brilliance. Absolutely. And I would say... And we've talked about this before. Like, should white people be treated with like the kid gloves or the smack in the nose? And I increasingly go with smack in the nose. And for this sort of just like really just petty fucking like, you know, bullshit kind of behavior. And he took it dead right. Like, and people like, I don't think it's a joke that he said, I'm going to send this to the ACLU and the board and this and that. Because what if he doesn't, right? What if he doesn't? What if he writes this letter and they get even more upset and then it fucking ratchets up and they come back with more bullshit and then they do call the cops? You know, it's like, honestly, and I've said this on other podcasts, when it comes to like work and safety and shit, like black folk, I implore you not to take any fucking fucks at all. don't give us white folk any sway. Go right to HR.
Yep.
Get your shit.
Complain.
Fucking, yeah, do it. Really. Because that's what's needed. And I feel like the more black people are unapologetically black, like the more you see blackout day, the more white people get out of pocket and start acting all fucking stupid.
They stay out of pocket.
Yeah, but it pulls it out, right?
Yeah, it's true. It's
like
true.
You coming in with your fucking like hair like purple and like, you know, twisted out and like amazing, and it's going to get touched. It's just like it's like a fucking like a magnet.
So some more receipts came to us courtesy of National Boyfriend Day, which was this past week. Because apparently one man wasn't aware of it because all seven of his girlfriends posted his picture on Twitter.
He has seven girlfriends?
Apparently so. Happy. One said, happy National Boyfriend's Day to my first love. Thanks for always being there. Love you, baby. Has his picture. Same picture. Happy National Boyfriend Day. Smooch heart. A little late, but happy National Boyfriend's Day to my boo. Same dude. Happy National Boyfriend's Day to my everything at King X Charles III. He's such a great father to our baby. Mm-hmm. There's more. Anywho, happy National Boyfriend's Day to my baby. We have our ups and downs, but I love you.
I'm not trying to be mean, but he ain't that cute, right? Like
no,
seven
he's
girl
not.
Cute?
He really isn't. So I just thought it was pretty funny.
Well, and there was a follow-up to that in that I think Gawker reached out to the seven women, and they all asked for money.
I bet. They should. Fuck Gawker.
Yeah.
Pay me what you owe me.
Yeah, that's true, dude. What
the fuck? This shit ain't free. What's the matter?
I'm trying to – this link you put up here. So Apple Music, customer service, Black Lives Matter test.
Yeah, so this guy, Rodney Blue, right? I'll talk about it. This guy, Rodney Blue, he opened up his Apple Music and his music was gone. And so he dug through the website and he found a support link. So he did a little test with them. So he opened it up and Ashley hit him. Thanks for contacting iTunes. My name is Ashley. Please give me a moment to look over your information. Hey there, Rodney. Nice of you to chat in. How are you doing today? Rodney says, okay, considering the police are murdering black people at unprecedented rates, our government is lying to us about their role in terrorism and generations long war, and my music, my missing Apple Music playlist, .. But shortly hit me with a professional, albeit hurtful, skirt, skirt. She says, well, I can't help you with the first part of that, but I'm sorry that your Apple Music playlists are missing. I would be upset too, so let's get that taken care of for you.
It's just such a good turnaround.
We may have to partner with our technical support for this, but let's try a few things to see if we can get you up and running. Turns out we did need technical support because Ashley came out the gate with a defeatist attitude, and in doing so, she failed us both. Then came Lauren. Thanks for contacting Apple Support. My name is Lauren. Please give me a moment to look over your information. Hey, Rodney, how you doing? And I don't know about y'all, but I have a mission, a defined purpose for living, and part of that is keeping people woke, so I hit her with the same. Okay, considering that police are murdering black people at unprecedented rates, our government is lying to us about their role in terrorism and generations-long wars, and my missing Apple playlist. Here goes Lauren. I know, right? It's getting really crazy out here. You keep yourself safe, Rodney, and be cautious, especially if you're a black man. The terrorism is slightly beyond our control, as is the presidential election, but that's a whole other issue that we just can't worry too much about. I can definitely help with your Apple Music, though. I hate to hear you're having trouble.
Mm-hmm. After that reply, Brandon, the
single Denzel tier. So not only did Lauren quickly and effectively resolve my problem and recover my playlist, she kept it 100,000 from the jump. It's all back. Thank you so much. And she says, absolutely. Thank you for your time as well, Rodney. I'm glad I could help. And then Rodney says, love yourself and each other. And he gave her the black fist. And she says, for sure. And gave him a black, Spock. I think it's a Spock thing. Yeah. Stay safe, bro. This is what solidarity looks like, he says. So shout out to Lauren from AppleCare, keeping it 100.
Wow.
Yes.
That's awesome, though.
It's so good.
That really is fan-fucking-tastic.
It really, truly is.
Especially if you're a black man.
Yeah, especially. Lamentably, this next shit is horrible, so.
Isn't always that way. Where's my horrible white people music?
Yes. White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
He's fragile.
Hey, 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 hey. White people.
God damn it.
Fucking white people. That's you.
Oh, this is me. This is my cry. That's you. So, Washington history lesson. Let me get out of here. Horrifies parents. Blacks used to have a strong work ethic during slavery. Holy fuck.
You haven't seen this yet?
Oh, man. I'm doing this live.
Okay. Yo, it's so bad.
A mother in Washington this week said she was outraged by an AP history lesson which extolled the virtues of slavery and accused Hillary Clinton of setting back the women's right movement. Mm-hmm. An AP history. This is advanced placement
history teacher decided to put together a 55-page supplemental packet titled U.S. History Special Victims Unit.
A 55-page packet titled U.S. History Special Victims Unit, which she described as a non-white male hit list. This is what her AP history teacher is including as part of a curriculum. Advanced U.S. history with a sharp lesson. Oops, these stupid ads. Where'd it go?
In present-day racism. Yeah.
Fuck.
According to the document, African Americans took full advantage of welfare programs that were created by President Lyndon B. Johnson's Great Society. Quote, the long-term results, however, have been devastating. Over three centuries of a strong work ethic, cohesive families, and the thirst for education and Christian values as vital parts of the African American heritage gave way to long-term dependence on the government and the erosion of the work ethic.
This is a teacher. This is a fucking teacher.
Yeah.
Of history. Mm-hmm. This is a fucking history teacher.
Mm-hmm.
This is literally a history teacher that is like literally delusional with white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. The actual, this is like the tweets are actually in here where she like puts it up there. And the one that really got me was when she talked about, this is from the section that's titled 1968 to present, tremendous gains in race relations, but trouble in paradise.
Yeah.
He talks about disastrous leadership. The civil rights movement of King was transformed into a permanent grievance industry by the new generation of leaders such as Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Louis Farrakhan, and President Obama's former pastor, Jeremiah Wright. King urged all Americans to focus not on skin color, but rather on the content of their character. The new leaders, however, recognized the political possibilities of a permanent voting constituency and personal power base based on race consciousness and victimhood. Rather than acknowledging the significant gains in civil rights or addressing the important issues summarized above, he literally references the pound cake speech and Clarence Thomas for his reasoning of why. These are what he put in this curriculum. That's what he referenced above, by the way.
Just stop.
Black leaders since the 1970s have been more inclined to fan the flames of black resentment. Whenever prominent African Americans spoke up against the paternalism of affirmative action, Ward Connor, against the destructive trends of black urban culture, comedian Bill Cosby, or against the devastation caused by the Great Society, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, they were attacked by the new leadership as being Uncle Toms, i.e. sellouts to the whites. Perhaps the greatest missed opportunity for racial healing in advance was the presidency of Barack Obama, the first mixed race. Ignoring real solutions to real problems, he stoked the fires of grievance. He lent his full support to a 2014-16 movement called Black Lives Matter, which protested, sometimes violently, a handful of high-profile deaths of young black men at the hands of white police. Two incidents galvanized the movement. Blah blah blah, and then he just—I mean, literally. Just
yeah, and we on multiple occasions on this show. It just takes one person.
Yeah,
it just takes one person. Yeah. Ronnie, you know, spoke up about a textbook. Was that a history book that called slavery a migration?
Migration. Yeah.
Yeah. So it just takes one person. And so this.
She also got this bitch fired last week.
Oh, and right.
Who called Michelle Obama a monkey several times.
Yeah, well, and Ronnie's Facebook Live was like, girl, you can't be doing that overt racism shit on Facebook and tell people where you work.
Like, don't do all of those
stupid.
Things. You dumb.
But so Rachel S. Grant spoke up and this is interesting, said that this was her daughter's teacher last year and felt that they couldn't speak up because if it were just liberal, if they'd flipped the roles, that they thought, well, you know, we're not going to just complain because of politics, but felt that this went beyond politics and this was an agenda and needed to speak up. And I totally agree. This isn't politics. This is false history. Mm-hmm. This is literally like
you're just making shit up.
Espousing
like you have a fucking
opinion.
Curriculum. Why are you supplementing it at all with your fucking spewed
and
hatred?
And calling it the special victims unit.
It's so gross.
And literally wrote, I'm a history teacher and an archaeologist, and I know that this is the most history they'll get about white males. Literally. Thinks that they're not going to actually get white male. Like, are you fucking crazy? All history is white male. What the fuck? This was an educator. Just egregious.
That's what it is. These are people teaching our children.
Egregious.
So the second white people story is comes courtesy of a young woman who was in a store the other day. I'll just read her story here. I was in a high-end store yesterday and picked up several ramekins and other homewares that were on serious sale, like 90% sale off. Off sale. This story isn't really about ramekins, but I will get to why the ramekins are great pertinence later. As I was in line, the lady behind me complimented my hair and attempted to strike up a conversation about the, quote, rioting happening uptown. This is in Charlotte. I thanked her for a compliment, but hesitated any further banter because I did not want an isolated incident to support any perpetuated beliefs about people that look like me. I let her slide with a, it looks so soft and shiny, not coarse at all comment. Side eye. I kindly stated that was a misconception most people have about black hair and continued to fake examine my items. She went on, oh, I just love black hair. I would love to have some. I would be so happy if my hair would do that. Again, I swallowed a lump in my throat, smiled at her and said, well, you can always get extensions. Then you too can have black hair. I swiftly turned around and my eyes could seriously not roll any further back in my head. Why me, Lord? Why? I pray that was the end of her attempts to engage. And it was, until she inquired about some of the items I was purchasing. Are those ramekins? How great are those colors? I didn't see those back there. She went on and asked me how much they were. This time I fully engaged with her. Sure, ramekins. No way this can go south. I let her know the price and she said, oh, that's a good price for those. Let me go get me some. I politely let her know that I took all of the stock that was on the shelf, 10 of them, but that there were others back there. However, they were not like the ones I selected. It was my intention to let her know up front as to not waste her time. I even suggested she ask an associate to see if they could be ordered, found in another store, see if they were more in the back, etc. Her face immediately changed. She looked confused, then sad, then angry. Homegirl didn't want those other ramekins. She wanted my ramekins. She then asked me, well, what are you going to do with all of them? Do black people cook with ramekins? I'm sure y'all aren't using them properly. How many is in your family? Do you actually need all 10? I just need 5.
Honestly, dude.
I stopped dead in my tracks. My ears were on fire. I could see myself as that cartoon character whose head was about to explode and had ears had steam coming out of them. All of these things were rolling through my head. Should I curse her out? Let her know that black people ramekins matter? Punch her in the godforsaken trachea so that she would never utter another syllable? Another insatiable, racially charged syllable? No. She wanted them and I had them. End of story. There was nothing that she could do to change that. Her desire for something that she wanted so badly allowed her true self to emerge for all to see. Here's where the ramekins play an interesting part. Ramekins are used for various baking purposes. Pastries, casseroles, breads, mixing cups, etc. Ramekins are a culinary staple for anyone who cooks. This lady was convinced that a person of my background could not know what the hell a ramekin is. So instead of going off or being belligerent, I played the game. Oh, I probably only use one or two at the most. I may plant some flowers in them, store my lipsticks in them, use them as cookie cutters, use them as change holders, sip soup like Belle and the Beast did for dinner one night, or probably just let them sit in a box in my cabinet connecting dust. She was pissed. There were laughs and chuckles and giggles coming from all sides of the store as I continued to ponder what I would do with these world-class ramekins. The other customers were quite amused by my response, as it was clear that everyone expected me to react quite differently than I had. The lady stepped out of the line, and honestly, I thought she was leaving. The gentleman behind her gently tapped me on the shoulder and confirmed my feelings with a side mouth. She's so rude. What a nutcase. I nodded. I rolled my eyes in agreement. By that time, I'm at the cash wrap and the associate is gently trying to express his sympathy for the lady's comments and dipping into some conversation about what's happening uptown. The store manager emerges from some secluded back door and asks me to step out of line. I give him 3 good blinks and I refuse and ask why. The lady of the hour is tucked closely behind him with her arms crossed. He said, I just want to allow this customer to purchase the items she had in her cart that were removed by you.
Wow, dude.
Before I could say one word, the associate says, I can't take this anymore. This lady's trying to purchase these items that she selected and not be questioned or accused. This lady has caused nothing but grief for this poor lady the whole time she's been in line. She has done nothing wrong, so please do not question her about anything. The manager looked so confused I didn't know what to do. There was an awkward moment of silence, which was broken by homegirl saying, I just want a fair chance to buy some ramekins, and that black girl doesn't even want them. I looked at the store manager with a long, slow side eye as he apologized for any confusion. He walked over to the lady, said something inaudible, and she walked out of the store saying, that black girl doesn't even know what to use them for. I paid for my items, thanked the associate for his role, and exited the store. As I was leaving, an older gentleman asked me if he could escort me to my car and carry my bags. At first, I thought it was a setup and that he was going to jump me for my ramekins. In my head, I'm thinking...
I just imagine her holding on to these ramekins like, fuck, you ain't fucking holding my fucking ramekins. You fucking kidding me? You fucking ramekins?
In my head, I was thinking, buddy got me messed up. I will tag you over these good ramekins. They have lids. But then I looked in his eyes and he had tears. Big old shirt staining, crying to your grandmother's apron tears. He said, I'm so sorry. I just stood there. We all heard her and we all just stood there. We knew it was wrong. We knew it wasn't about the ramekins, but we couldn't find the words to tell her to stop. He cried a while. I stood there silent. He held my hand and squeezed it from time to time. At first, I thought this might have been for show, but what did he have to gain? After a while, he pulled a handkerchief out of his pocket, wiped his eyes, and kissed me on the hand. Nothing else was said. As soon as I got in my car, I was numb. I was upset and yet comforted by the kiss on the hand from a stranger. I knew what he meant, but wondered if this would actually cross over into his daily life. As I've shared his story with a few friends and family members, the responses have been vastly different. Some agree with my behavior and some thought I acted a little too eloquently. But the best part is that everyone is touched by the associate and the gentleman that made an effort to stand up for what is right, show kindness, ask for forgiveness, and move forward all over a ramekin.
You know, and it's just, There's a good couple lessons, and I think that that's always, we've talked on the show, like, poof, a racism happens. Yes. You know, like, poof, racism happens. Yeah. And it, like, stuns you. Like, oh, my God, what should I do? And the solution is never silence. Just, right. You know,
say something.
And honestly, remaining completely mute is it allows other people to remain mute. So if you say anything and open up a dialogue, I've seen it happen in real time. It, like, people kind of like pile on. And
they
you
do.
You don't even have to say it.
Because if you're silent, what ends up piling on is the racist pile on.
Correct.
That's
correct.
What happens.
Well, and so and literally all you have to say, I've seen this before, is like, holy cow, that was rude. You don't have to like say it's racist. Like, man, what was that? Like, man, I don't agree with that. Like, just anything.
Right.
Just, I don't agree with that.
Right.
That's it. Wow, that's really onerous. I don't agree with that at all. That's all you got to say. And then people start speaking up. And maybe in this instance, the woman like, boy, would you like her to leave you alone? This is kind of crazy with these ramekins.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Or ramekins.
Really.
And then the whole anti-black thing, but like, you don't even know how to use them. You know what you're doing. Like, no. Just... Fuck.
Just no.
We white people are the worst. Like, she's trying to Columbus ramekins.
Literally.
She's trying to fucking...
She doesn't know how to use them.
She's trying to Columbus ramekins at a fucking, like, at a Crate and Barrel. You know it was like a fucking Crate and Barrel. She's trying to Columbus some fucking ramekins. Get out of here with that.
Mm-mm-mm.
Too goddamn much.
Nope. Mm-mm-mm. Anyways, Luke Cage is out.
Yeah. You know, and I shouldn't go. I like it. Yeah, I like it.
That's good for you.
I know you aren't as thrilled with it, and I agree.
So
the other Jessica Jones and Daredevil, I think, are appropriate comparisons. Both of those, I thought, did a better job with taking 13 episodes and having a long arc of the 13 episodes. Like Frank Castle's the long arc, but then there's just like individual episodes that don't involve Castle, right? Like, they had the long arc last season on Daredevil that involved the Punisher, but, like, there was, like, four episodes he wasn't in at all. Like, they were able to do things without that arc being present.
Right.
And same with, who's the big D'Onofrio's character? Not Stark. Big white dude that was the bad guy in season one on Daredevil.
Fisk.
Right. You know, same thing. Like, he's the long arc, but there was able to have episodes that didn't involve Fisk. Like, that was a possibility. This seems, on Luke Cage, the long arc is sort of like, I guess, Cottonmouth, and there hasn't been anything that's not with him. And he's not a good villain.
No, he's not.
And the writing for Alfre Woodard's horrible.
Terrible. Terrible.
Horrible. Every line she delivers, I feel like it's that one from... you broke your little ships. When she's on the... Which Star Trek was that?
First Contact.
Yeah.
Right?
Picard like slams all the...
You broke your little ships.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's a terrible line.
Like that.
Just like that. So they're not doing a good job with that. But I like it nonetheless. And I don't want to talk, but I guess the first four episodes, Luke made a point on three different occasions about the N-word. And I thought that was... I don't know. I don't know what they're driving at, I guess.
I don't know. It just seems real, like, steeped in, like, respectability politics, and a lot of it just don't even make sense. And I'm just not used to that. Like I said, it's all right. I'm enjoying it. I don't think it's some, like, groundbreaking piece of black cinema, whatever.
I like the character, and I like the actor.
The music is dope as fuck.
And the music's fantastic.
The women are dope as fuck.
Oh.
So, there's
finally,
those things.
Rosario finally came on.
I met her this weekend.
Oh, she's so beautiful.
She's a very nice lady. So a few things I watched on Netflix, a new show called Easy, which I think you should watch. It's sort of this like weird anthology kind of thing.
Okay.
And it's about, I guess, kind of like pairing up and coupledom and kind of the ins and outs of that. And there's a few storylines that are followed through. It's like people that interact with each other, but they're not all friends, if that makes any sense. So like one's like a babysitter of a couple, and then it's that couple's best friend, and then it's that other couple's boss. So it's kind of like convoluted, but it's pretty interesting. And then Bloodline, which I started watching earlier this year and finally got back into. I think I'm finishing season one. I know they just had a season two come out, but it's probably the best work Kyle Chandler's like done ever. It's so good.
I honestly, as an actor, I'll watch him in anything.
He's so good.
I really love Kyle
Chandler. And the storyline is so good. And Linda Cardellini is in it. Sissy Spacek is in it. It's so good. So I just really loved it. And then I've also been trying to catch up on the first season of Greenleaf on OWN, which was surprisingly really good. Like I had kind of written it off. I thought it was like a Tyler Perry thing, but it's definitely more nuanced than that. And I've been really enjoying it.
We haven't finished the second season of Narcos.
Yeah,
but
we
got to
get on
too.
That. I love Narcos. I think it's a great show.
I love the guy that plays
Pablo. Well, he ain't long for the world, so get him while you can. Yeah. We also still, you can, I think, get some t-shirts at teespring.com/stores/first-response.
I don't know what I'm doing half the time.
True.
So I launched the Teespring campaigns like a month ago.
Right.
And then one of our, is it Hootsuite? One of the things has one of these automated, like, you know, send out a tweet every day, you know, twice a day kind of thing. So when I put the Teespring up, I was like, oh, I'll make a tweet for, like, you know, there's one for our podcast, one for the Teespring, and then there's one for maybe like the, something else. But anyway, I put it on and I hit the like automated thing and forgot about it. So today I get a message on, I don't look at my email often enough, but I go to this email account and I see a series of messages from Teespring. I'm like, what the fuck? This is weird. First one, like, oh, we've relaunched your campaign. I was like, oh, you did? Cool, I guess. And then it was like, we've closed your campaign. I'm like, oh, all right, cool. We've got this money for you. And it all happened without me. Like, I guess people, like, if you go to the thing and it's closed, you can put your card in and say, like, I still want one. And then if enough people do that, it's like, aha, it's reopened. And then, like, I keep tweeting it so people keep buying it. And, like, I didn't even, like, realize it. Like, the campaign reopened and, like a lot, like 12 t-shirts were bought, like, without me even trying. It's kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I get bully on you, Teespring. They're not all garbage.
Yeah, bully on you, Teespring. So anyways, so you can check that out. I think three of the shirts are...
I relaunched them all.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah. I mean,
Teespring's going to be automatically relaunching campaigns. I might as well do it, like, officially.
For real? Okay.
If I'm going to be tweeting it out every day, I might as well, like, have the capacity to buy the shirts.
Well, that's good. And we have 26 days left on my vacation fund, so I still need to try and get $15 a day to hit my goal. So people are going to share that one. That would be cool. You can find that on our website and also on my Twitter and on my Facebook and my web, really anywhere you see us, you can find that one. And I'll be in St. Louis. We're both going to be in St. Louis, actually. We're going to be going to the Revive Love event at First Unitarian Universalist in St. Louis on Saturday the 15th. And I will be preaching at Alton UU Church in Alton, Illinois on Sunday the 16th at 10 a.m. if you're in the area.
And I'll be hanging out with my sister from another mister.
You'll be doing
my best
that.
Ever.
That's a fact. What else? Anything else? What do you got? What else you got?
You know, it's been, so like I said, my day job and work, and it's just been busy. Mm. Things have been kind of crazy, mm-hmm. You know? I was going to talk about something else, but I won't talk about it.
You can talk about it.
No, it doesn't. I don't know, you know. I don't like sometimes like my business.
Too much like personal stuff. That's fine. We can
my business on the streets.
All right, we don't need your business on the streets.
But it's been super hectic, mm-hmm. And I've been kind of disengaged from everything except the immediate needs, which is kind of like the job and the house and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hopefully, I'd say hopefully slowing down, but I don't think so. Today I worked like every minute of every, I was up at like 6
in
the morning.
Yeah, we like barely snuck this in, and we're having Dr. Miss Smooth Mustache over for dinner tonight, so we have to go cook that. So yeah.
But it's...
we got it in, though. Got it out.
I miss you. I miss podcasting.
You too, I know.
I hate that.
But this will be the last one we have to skip. I'm not gone any other
can
weeks.
Can we podcast
much.
In Jamaica when we're on our trip?
We'll see.
I want to bring the equipment.
I don't know about bringing the equipment.
Yeah.
I'll think about it. You have to bring it on the plane.
All right.
I don't know.
I'm not bringing anything. I'm bringing like a bathing suit, like 4 t-shirts.
You say that shit every year and then you bring a whole bunch of crap. I don't believe you.
I'm such a pack mule. That's terrible. I'm really going to do it this year, though.
Sure you
are. I'm serious. I'm really going to do it.
Okay. I'm going to take pictures of your luggage before
I'm bringing like underwear. And like, I got that fucking, the spike ball thing. That's going to take up a lot of space.
Mm-hmm.
I got to get that on a suitcase.
You do.
No room for clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I got to bring toys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Anything else?
No, that's it.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
High five.